We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of other things when it comes to what we put into our bodies. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. Yet there is more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory, flavor is feeling, flavor is science, flavor is art, flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Randy Donovan, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Welcome back to Flavor University. I'm your host, Randy Donovan. Today, we're diving into one of the biggest conversations shaping the future of food and beverage, GLP-1 medications. While they're changing how many consumers think about eating, they're also changing how people experience flavors. And that's creating entirely new opportunities for food innovation. In this episode, we'll explore why flavor matters more than ever, how changing eating behaviors are influencing product development, and what brands should be thinking about as they create foods and beverages for the evolving consumer. So let's dig in. I am excited to introduce today's guests. So today we have three guests, and I'm going to let them jump in, introduce themselves, and tell them a little bit about what they do here at McCormick Flavor Solutions.
So my name is Pamela Oscarson. I am the senior manager on the Consumer and Market Insight team supporting Flavor Solutions. I just celebrated 20 years with McCormick. So lots of time, I guess I can say I dream about consumers and flavor. Other side note, I am a longtime listener to the podcast, but also this is my sixth time being recorded. Fun fact, I was the second podcast recorded ever for Flavor University. So lots of fun back in the pandemic days when we were recording in masks and 6 feet apart. So definitely a different conversation that we get to have fun with today. My job is to put the consumer lens on all of the different categories that we help our customers flavor, and that is done through primary research. So I get to look at flavor movement and understanding what flavors consumers like and dislike and help our customers kind of have their plan of attack and picking the right flavors for their products.
I guess I'll go next. I'm a colleague of Pamela's, Tom Cavers. I'm a director on our Consumer and Market Insight team, and I wear a lot of different hats, mostly on the consumer side of the business, but I do look at some trends and do some trend spotting work on that covers at a corporate level what's going on with our business. And, as you know, both on the consumer side and the flavor solution side, at the end of the day, we serve the same customer, right? The consumer. And so I've been with the company for 8.5 years or so. And this is my second time on the podcast, so not quite the veteran that Pamela is. But, you know, with regard to our topic today, I've done a lot of research. We've done work with consumers, meeting with them and spending time with them and learning about how they're dealing with GLP-1. We've done a lot of secondary research. We've done a lot of our own surveys with GLP-1 consumers. So I've done a lot of trend spotting in this space, and it's super interesting. And I'm looking forward to talking about it today.
That's awesome. Thank you, Tom.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Simchek. I'm a principal scientist of flavor innovation technology. I have my PhD in chemistry, and I've been with McCormick for 7 years. I lead our research and innovation team, so all things science behind flavor. And this is also my second time on the podcast. I did a podcast on taste modification maybe a couple years ago.
Oh my goodness, what pros we have today. I'm really excited about today's topic because I think just everywhere, the GLP-1 medications, the class of drugs are, I feel like you can't look anywhere without seeing people talking about it, hearing about it, whether it's kind of offhanded, but you're like, oh, is so-and-so celebrity taking them, or walking down the grocery aisle, you're seeing, protein, fiber, all different kinds of support, even on frozen meals, you're seeing, GLP-1 support meals. And I can't think in my history as a consumer or in the food industry, I can't think of an influence on food that has been this impactful, whether it's a medication, a trend. I truly can't think of anything that has been this powerful or far-reaching, whether it's a trend or actual medication health-wise, anything like this. So I'm really happy you're all here and excited to talk about this and what it means for flavor for us and consumers. So thank you all for being here. So tell me, aside from kind of what I just said, what do you each kind of think, why is GLP-1 relevant to flavor and food innovation right now? What are you each kind of seeing and thinking?
I've got three parts to that answer, I guess. First, GLP-1 is part of a bigger shift going on in how consumers and how people in general, not only in the United States, but across the world, are being much more proactive about their own health and wellness and taking their diet into their own hands. Food is really at the center of this trend. And consumers are hungry, pun intended, for tools that will help them eat more healthily, help them change their own health outlook. You know, whether that means more protein, less sugar, less alcohol, better hydration, I mean, all these things. GLP-1 is one of those tools, and it's not the only one. It also matters because GLP-1 is influencing mainstream behaviors. You really hit on that, Randy, right? You have to be living in a cave not to know about GLP-1 right now, especially in developed economies, right? I think Novo Nordisk spent something like $500 million on GLP-1 advertising last year. I mean, it's just crazy. But also, we know from talking to consumers and we know from survey data that if you know someone on GLP-1, it's likely to influence your behavior, especially if you live with them. If you live with them, it's definitely influencing you. And then the last thing, just, you know, why does it matter, is this is not going away. It's not short term. It's really part of a long term structural change to food and beverage that's going on. And GLP-1 in particular, it's being studied for so many potential uses. Those are both big and small things. I mean, things like sleep apnea, which is a serious problem for a lot of people. It's being studied for that. But also things like cancer prevention, healthy aging, impulse control, right? Addiction. The patient population for these uses is huge. It's almost everyone. And so that's going to create just such a greater diversity of nutritional needs out there on the part of consumers. It might not just be about weight loss in the future. It might actually be about gaining weight, but it also can be other things like preserving muscle mass and hydration and all these other things that go along with the metabolism, right? And changes in metabolism. And so that's just going to create tremendous opportunity in the food industry to help consumers with these nutritional needs. And as we're doing that, we know flavor is going to be a huge part of making those food work in those circumstances and meet those new nutritional needs. So it matters for a lot of reasons. It's a big, huge change going on in our industry.
When we first started talking about GLP-1 and starting doing our research, like, I almost thought it was a fad. We're like, okay, this is going to come and go like other diets and other things, but it's beyond a diet. It is impacting not only the role of flavor and taste, not just appetite, it's consumer, that's changing their shift in how they're eating, how much they're eating, and it's changing their preferences and how they're stocking their pantries. It's changing the entire dynamic of how consumers choose what to eat and drink, because when they're taking them, they have less food noise. So they're not constantly thinking about food, but they're being more intentional in what they're eating, and that's changing. So with their taste preferences changing, there is no one-size-fits-all product, and there isn't a magic bullet. I think a lot of times we get on calls with customers, and they're like, okay, I want to launch a GLP-1 product. Can we do a survey for X, Y, and Z? And I have to take a step back and kind of level set with them and say, okay, there isn't the perfect flavor, because we all could be on GLP-1s, and all of our preferences could be different. Our side effects to the medications could be different. And that's the unique part about this, about GLP-1s. It's different. So we have to find that common ground where it is and where the overlap is to help our customers pick the right flavor for a GLP-1 consumer.
I think the biggest thing with the GLP-1s and with food and flavor is that consumers' taste experiences are changing. So what they might have liked before going on GLP-1s might not be what they like now because how they perceive flavor is different. There are different tastes that are enhanced or reduced that just affect how you perceive and whether you like or dislike something. So those taste preferences too are not everybody has the same taste preference. So, you know, it opens up a whole realm of new territory that, you know, we need to explore and test out and evaluate and kind of see.
That's so interesting. It made me think of pregnancy. And everybody's symptoms are so different and cravings are so different.
Yeah.
And like I said, pretty much a terrible analogy, but it's so personalized. And, you know, it's
like a great example. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom. You know, you can't say what is, you know, if we want to help pregnant women, what flavor, you know, one woman could love strawberry and another, it could just make her lose her mind. You know, it is so personalized and that's so, so interesting. So, you know, you guys gave your introductions and what your, you know, history and role here is. So as we dig in, so can you tell me in your roles kind of what you're doing in this category and sort of how you're working with GLP-1 and kind of why, I guess, why are you here today? What's your share out on this?
I look at this through the consumer lens, Randy, and I've been doing a lot of research into this with consumers themselves and surveying them and spending time with them. And it's fascinating to speak with them and hear how their relationship with food changes when they go on these. And you hear them talk about food noise, and it's fascinating. And a lot of it's very positive when you hear from consumers about it, which is interesting to hear too.
That's awesome.
Empowerment story. But I've also been doing a lot of work into the broader marketplace understanding of how this is impacting the food and beverage market in general. And so we're looking at the data about which categories go up and which categories go down and trying to understand, you know, what's in the pipeline for GLP-1, because as I said, it's being studied for so many things. And so how do we plan for our businesses against this? And how do we think about, you know, what's coming in the future for GLP-1?
And I was kind of along that journey with Tom, but I'm taking it one step further for our kind of customers and segments within Flavor Solutions. So we're looking at how does this impact protein beverages or protein bars, or even within the custom restaurant space? Like, what does that mean when a consumer is eating out? Their choices are going to be completely different. So while we don't focus on flavoring GLP-1 medications, we focus on helping our customers create great tasting companion products, because there's a lot of things while you're on a GLP-1, you want something that works well with it. So that's a completely different perspective than we've taken in the past, because it's new and it's different. So putting that consumer lens and finding the right companion for those that are on GLP-1s it's fun and exciting.
I lead our taste modification platform, which means it's my job to bring in new tools to help make things that taste not great taste better. And so what that means is when we get projects in that are for GLP-1 products that we know have certain, maybe they're fortified, so they have more protein or whatever it is that is going in them, I work closely with our R&D team and our flavorists to help develop new tools to make the products taste better. So that means, you know, a lot of masking bitterness, a lot of optimizing mouthfeel, especially with things that have added protein, to just try and make the product overall experience better, make it, you know, a more fuller, more optimized product so that the consumers are liking what they're eating.
That's what I find really most fascinating about this whole world of what we all do, you know, in truly the whole food world, is the magic. You are the magic maker, because no matter wizard. What we're having, the yeah, the wizard. We all want it to be delicious, no matter right. what we're doing and having, and a GLP-1 yeah. or not. We want it to taste good and yes. feel good, and yes. you know, we want to enjoy it. So
we have a lot of fun with it. It's a lot of fun tasting things that are, you know, kind of gross, and playing around and seeing what works and what doesn't work. It's a fun job. It's creativity, it's science, it's
definitely,
you know, all the above.
Oh my gosh, this is so much information and such a great start. And I feel like we really have kind of these puzzle pieces that we have now to understand kind of how we're approaching this, and to understand, you know, GLP and what we're looking at, and how to best support kind of everybody out there, and to make, you know, their experience, if they're using these, you know, this class of medication or these medications. And so how, you know, we kind of started talking about it a little bit, but how might GLP-1 change how consumers eat and experience flavor?
So I think I have kind of two main things to focus on there. So first would be, consumers are having smaller, more intentional eating moments, which in some ways, when you look at it, it could give them the option to have more variety because they're eating less, but the options could be endless, but their appetite is reduced. A lot of consumers that we have talked to have said that they are eating less while taking GLP-1 medication. So they're eating less, they're kind of grazing more, eating smaller meals to make them feel full longer. But also around the idea that taste has to work harder, because their taste preferences and changes, as Lindsay mentioned, it's changed over time. So their cravings might be more sweet. They might lean more away from things like fried or rich products, or even alcoholic beverages, right? They're ordering more grilled when they're eating out at restaurants. So we have to kind of connect it to that emotional reward. We're like, okay, it's worth it for me to eat healthier. It tastes good. And in the end, there's a lot more flavor impact when the flavor meets the end result.
I think there's another lens on the experience where you can think about this as the journey that the consumer is on, and that journey is going to have different episodes, if you will, that we can focus on. You know, they're starting the medication and getting used to that new diet that you're having on it. Then there's a period of rapid weight loss where you're like, oh my God, I got to preserve my protein, my muscle mass, right? I need more protein. Then there's, you know, plateauing. We've heard lots of consumers get frustrated. They talk to us and say, you know, like, I just hit a plateau. And so I felt, you know, I needed to increase the dosage, or I needed to get to a new drug because I wasn't making any more progress. Then there's people who want to go off it. I reached my goal, yay, but now I want to go off it. And then often people will eventually say, well, it's not working anymore, right? How do I, you know, maintain those habits that I got when I was on the drug? So there's real episodes that we can focus on. And if you just focus on one aspect or one episode, you're going to miss opportunities that are beyond that. So I think that's a really key thing about the experience. And then, you know, kind of as a sidebar to that is, like, there are a lot of win-wins here in this space with consumers, you know, and that's what's so interesting about it. Protein's an obvious example. Like, it's not just GLP-1 users who are trying to get more protein. Maybe they have a really heightened and acute need during that massive weight loss period, but just about everyone's trying to get more protein in their diet these days. Same with hydration. And so I think that really creates a challenge for every business and brand out there to think about how they position their products around these episodes and these target users, to think about, how can I make it a win-win, right? Because ideally that is opens a bigger pie for you to access.
A lot of the things that are happening with GLP-1 users is also happening with, when you look at the broader landscape of health and wellness today, food, beverage, supplements, they're running parallel paths. So you're right about thinking about it, where it's just not the GLP-1 consumer. Take a step back. Like, how can we service more consumers with the products that we're creating? Because everyone wants to be healthier. It's just how they get there.
When you mention that people that might not even be on these medications are picking up kind of some of these healthy habits, my mom, who has, you know, been you know, somewhat health conscious, but not super health conscious. But recently I was with her and she grabbed, I don't know if it was, you know, some leftover grilled chicken or turkey, like roll up, and said, I need a little protein. And, you know, it's like, who is this woman? You know, I've never heard her say that. And, you know, carrying, you know, a water bottle, I need to hydrate. And, you know, this is someone who never. And now my sisters and I don't know why, we just, it's stuck with us. And every time we talk about my mom, we're like, I just need a little protein. This was somebody that now, you know, protein was like the peanuts in a Snickers. So, but it's awesome. You know what I mean? It's really awesome to see that trickle down effect of these great habits and education, you know, coming from these.
Randy, to your comment, yeah. People are so much more aware of their diets these days and self-conscious about them. And the amount of activity around dieting or behavior change that occurs is just so much more than it was maybe 30 or 40 years ago, right?
Right.
Like, I think the stat is something like 2 out of 3 people will try a diet in a given year. And it's not necessarily diet in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to get more protein. That's a diet, right? Or I'm trying to get more hydration. They go through these periods where they'll try it. And in particular, younger people too. It's not just older people as well. And so that just creates a dynamic of lots and lots of food behavior change in a given year, and a lot of trying of new products and a lot of need for new flavors, right? Like, I'm in a new realm, new category that I've never been in, and which flavors do I like of these products, right? And what works. So
absolutely. I think a lot of it has to do with the advancement, and think of the apps that you now have available on your phone. Like, AI has taken over where you can take a picture of what you're eating and it'll tell you how many calories. Like, no, my mom was a diehard points counter, right? She would calculate everything, count her points when she was on a diet. Yes. And now it is much easier to take a picture of your what you're eating, and it'll automatically upload it onto your phone and keep track for you, which I think is leaning into the younger consumers who are always on their phone. It's a new appendage, right? So it's easier for them to think about how they're eating and eating healthier because the phone is doing and the apps are doing the work for them.
Absolutely. Another thing I think is really, really interesting when you mention points and, you know, the phone, and even when GLP-1 came out, it was sort of secretive. A lot of this was a very kind of secretive thing. And at first, people weren't, you know, some of it was because it was new. Some of it was, you know, anything new, there's a little bit of fear and how much information is known. And now it's very out in the open, you know, oh, this is the app I use to track my food. And a lot of people are sharing that they are on a GLP-1. These are the products I use to support myself. This is how I track my food. This is what I'm doing. And, you know, the more open people are, the more education there is, the more information. It's amazing, the support system out there and people sharing and educating one another. And, you know, I love that. I mean, I'm very open, obviously, but it's wonderful to see
well,
that
you know,
world.
It's kind of interesting. We heard this talking to consumers that the medical community does not support people who are on GLP-1 in their journey. They prescribe it. And obviously the creation of the drug itself is helping people and things like that. But doctors can be rather transactional in how they deal with GLP-1. So they make sure you qualify and here you go. I mean, we can talk later about, if you want, that, you know, the online health kind of thing. But, we've heard a lot of GLP-1 users talk about, where can I get help? How do I get support? What do I do through this journey? And online communities like Reddit or online influencers have been huge for this space. Many of whom are nutritionists, right, who are helping with it, some of whom are doctors as well. But their primary care doctors most often are not. That's what we hear. Most often are not playing a very active role. That's for another doctor to handle or another professional to handle. And I think that creates a real gap. And I think that's partly why you're seeing such openness among people, is that they're not getting those, having those conversations with their doctors, right?
That's so interesting. So what are kind of the win-wins that you're seeing across some food and beverage categories?
I think it's sort of interesting, the merging of supplements and beverages and how much is going on there. So obviously protein's been huge with beverages, and you know, we've seen some of that with fiber too, but creatine and taurine and some of these other supplements out there, which often have some relationship to weight loss or muscle prevention or, you know, just general health too. I mean, the claims that are found for some of these supplements, there are a lot of different claim benefits, and some of them have been studied quite a bit. Creatine's an interesting one. It has been studied quite a bit. So I just think that's a really interesting overlap of how supplements and beverages and some foods. I wonder if we'll see more supplements in more foods than beverages in the future. But beverages is such a hot space for innovation when it comes to this stuff.
I also think we talk about the three drink theory, right? Where consumers are, they want products to play many different roles. And when they don't see that happening naturally, we have pictures of it that we've gotten from social media. Consumers have three different cups. I have my protein, I have my coffee, I have my hydration beverage. So I think consumers naturally fitting those in and having the flavor pairings work with each other and play that role for them to help them achieve their health and wellness goals is kind of fun to see. I only have one cup with me today, but most oftentimes there's many on my desk, right? Where you're multitasking and I'm thirsty. Right. Now I need a boost of energy. Now I need my protein drink because I need to get me through the afternoon meetings. And consumers are the same.
So true, Pamela. And like how like the benefits just start to multiply. So it's like, you're getting a dairy-free coffee, right? Beverage just gives you the caffeine, but because it's dairy-free, that dairy-free has a benefit of gut health. It's that, you know, and it just sort of multiplies into this stew of benefits.
Absolutely. In the mornings, especially during the school year, I'll get in the car with my daughter and I'll have like three or four drinks, and she'll be like, "You're ridiculous, you know, I'm trying to carry everything." And I'm like, "Well, I need to hydrate and I need my caffeine and I need my afternoon treat." You know, I'm like, I need them all. So what about in snacks? Any good things out there? Any thoughts on that in relation to the GLP-1?
I think we're seeing a lot of everyday global CPG brands come out with products that are traditional, right? We already have in our pantry, but they're adding things like fiber. They're adding things like protein. So it makes it an easy choice. You're like, "Oh, I know what this product tastes like. Let me go to the healthier scale," right? And oftentimes they're probably buying both, where you're like, "Okay, I'm already buying this chip that I like. Let me get the healthier version. Someone will eat it. I'll eat it," right? It's good. It's interesting to see them kind of step out of the traditional part of the aisle where it's just salty snacks just for that specific craving, and then also appealing to the healthier consumers.
Yeah, that's a great great point too about buying both. I bought I shouldn't admit this. I bought some really expensive like protein packed cereal, and I told my kids. So my son just graduated from college. He's home, and my daughter's going into her junior year of high school, and she's a swimmer. So you guys, she can just eat the whole house, okay? And I said, "This is cereal. It's not regular cereal. You can't eat a bowl of this. This little bag of cereal is $10, you know?" So yeah, there's still regular cereal in the house too. So it's funny when you say buy, you know, you buy both. I'm like, "This is the cereal you sprinkle on your yogurt. The cereal you eat three bowls of." So that's a good call out, Pamela, to both. Lindsay, what about for you when you're seeing, you know, these products come your way? How does that play around for you, you know, when you're seeing a bunch of protein or, you know, you mentioned mouthfeel, you know, yeah, different things like that for you.
I mean, we're seeing so many new supplements. I mean, everything with protein, creatine is big, botanical supplements that offer, you know, like brain health and, you know, it's everything's piled on top of each other too, because everybody wants, you know, a gummy that has everything in it so that they only have to consume like one kind of gummy, right? And every time you add an additional functional ingredient, you're also adding off notes that need to be covered up, right?
Okay.
And whatever you're adding has different off notes that need to be addressed. So protein and creatine, you're getting flavor masking, so they absorb flavor, so the flavor gets muted. So you need flavor enhancers. You also need mouthfeel enhancers. Creatine adds like a chalky, like drying and just like a full mouth coating that needs to be optimized. Protein, depending on the type of protein, can add bitterness or like dirty, earthy notes if you're going plant-based protein. And then mouthfeel, a lot, like all protein needs mouthfeel, right? You've got grittiness, you've got some astringency. You need to kind of take that protein and make it creamy, make it rich, so that it is tasting more of like your typical, like, I don't know, like milk or cream, right? Because you want it to be smooth and creamy. So just a lot of these products that GLP-1 consumers and also just the health conscious consumer are looking for with fortification, everything needs taste fortification because consumers want things that taste good. At the end of the day, they're not going to repurchase something that doesn't taste good. So, you know, it's all about making that experience optimized for taste, right? So that it's both functional and delicious at the same time, which in today's day and age just keeps getting more and more challenging.
What are some of the insights that you can, you know, recommend or turn into product development action?
I would tell a customer to think about GLP-1s in a broader sense, right? We have seen, not only because of GLP-1s, but across the past couple of years, even starting with things like clean label, that health and wellness is a broader landscape, and it's not just a narrow diet fad. It is something that is kind of transforming the entire food and beverage landscape. So think about it much broader and not pigeonhole yourself into, oh, I have to create this for a GLP-1 consumer. This is happening right now. Create your long-term success and look at it through the lens of the health and wellness consumer overall. And I think the industry, I think, is almost in some ways doing exactly that. We're not seeing a ton of products saying like, ooh, for GLP-1 users, where like, I think if you think back to keto, I think like people thought like, okay, I'm on keto. This product is for me. But people that weren't on keto weren't like, oh, I'm not on keto. Why would I purchase that? So I think that's a smart way to approach it. Whereas like you can educate consumers and tell them, yes, this could be your GLP-1 companion product, but not calling it out on the label, because then you're alienating the rest of the consumers who could consume it who aren't on GLP-1s. So it's an interesting approach, because I initially thought like, okay, we saw some companies come out with products with GLP-1 on the front. Some menu items were introduced as GLP-1, and then it stopped. You're like, oh, that's an interesting approach at first, but it's not a one size fits all. So how do you target the largest mass of consumers?
Oh my gosh, you guys, this was so good and so many great insights. I love this topic because I truly think it's everywhere. And I know when I am with friends and family, it is something we talk about a lot, whether it's, you know, people looking to drop a few pounds or true health, you know, concerns. And, you know, we mentioned it's not just about weight, but cancer and diabetes and sleep apnea, aging, you know, it's such a huge umbrella we're seeing. And it's something that it's a different kind of drug than we've seen in so many years. A lot of people are saying this is a lifetime achievement type of medication that we will And who knows when we'll see something like this again. And then for us in this flavor industry, it is so far-reaching. And, you know, it's a fun thing to play with because it's got our minds working and how creative, you know, can we be. But it's also, you know, a necessary type of thing to work with because we want consumers to be happy and satisfied and you know, everybody loves flavor. We love to enjoy what we're consuming. So, you know, we're seeing this dynamic flavor landscape out there and just new ways to achieve greatness in what we do. And, you know, the technology and expertise of Lindsay and all the people that you, you know, coach and mentor and work with are making that happen for all of us every day. And Pamela and Tom, you know, reaching out to consumers and really bringing that connection and information. That's a different kind of connection. So you really bring that to life for all of us. Okay, so I always end the podcast with a question that kind of pops in my head as we are talking. And today we were talking about kind of intentional eating moments and smaller bites. So for all of you, I want to know if you had an intentional eating moment that might be one or two bites. What is your perfect little bite?
I will always go for a cookie. I like oatmeal cookies or chocolate chip. Ooh. If those are not available, I'll go for like a gummy can, like a Starburst or something like that. The gummies. I mean, I love chocolate too. I don't discriminate, but that's my order. Like if the world was my option, that's where I would go.
Okay. Okay. And then next question, oatmeal raisin, oatmeal chocolate chip.
Oh, definitely chocolate chip. But even just oatmeal by itself is great. I just like the texture and it usually has like some brown sugar in it. I like the brown sugar oats. Yeah.
I respect that very much. I feel like the oatmeal cookie is not respected enough by the world, Lindsay.
It's not. It's not.
I like that. All right, Pamela.
I'm a big lunch dessert person. I like to feel like I've earned it, right? Like I made it through the morning and I have proof of yesterday's lunch dessert, which was my Hershey bar. Like tried and true delicious milk chocolate. Like that's where it comes to me. So looking forward to this afternoon's lunch dessert.
Oh, I love that. And what is today's lunch dessert?
Oh, the same.
You know yet? Oh, the same.
Yeah. Oh, obviously, because it's summer, my son is home. Like all right, what's for lunch dessert today? Oh, so sometimes it'll be a cookie or something that we've baked previously, but there's always chocolate available.
Oh, I love that. Awesome. And I'm just going to share, I want everybody to know Pamela bakes with her son all the time. And it's just like the most sweet, just the sweetest, most adorable thing. And then
I wish you were in our office, Pamela, so we even come to those treats.
I'll mail some to you. Thanks. And now that he's 12, and I've talked about him on all of my podcast journey, but now that he's 12, I'm the cleanup crew. Because and that's where like I love to bake too. So you're like, right, he's somewhere else. I can whip up something quick on my own. But yes, I love baking with him. But he's probably listening to us as we record this. But yes, he's also an excellent baker. So, but Randy, you have to share some of your recipes.
Oh, all right. And then what's your bite, Tom? What's your perfect?
I'm also in the sweet camp, and I've gotten addicted to a product called Trufru. Do you guys know this in the frozen?
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's the perfect thing. So it's these small portions, right? So you talk about little bite. Like, so in theory, I'm having less for my dessert at night, right? Before I go to bed. But of course, I end up eating like half the bag. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
And it's so expensive. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I bought that again. I mean, but it's so good. And that chocolate on the outside and the you get some texture because it's frozen, but then the juicy kind of fruit on the inside. It's just wonderful.
Oh my gosh. My husband was having like a Trufru problem. So are you raspberry Trufru, strawberry Trufru?
Banana.
Yeah, banana. There's pineapple.
They have a Greek yogurt version now that I've tried as well.
Goodness.
They've really been expanding. But I do kind of like the tried and true strawberry or the raspberry, the field chocolate.
Love the strawberry. So good.
Right? Yeah. It is so good. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay, so I'm going to say my perfect bite is probably brie with some, like, fig jam.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's probably my perfect like perfect bite. So, well, thank you all so much. And flavor fans, that is it for today's episode. I hope today's podcast conversation gave you a new perspective on how changing consumer behaviors can shape the future of flavor. As eating and drinking habits evolve, one thing remains the same. Consumers still expect every bite and sip to be delicious. And that is where thoughtful flavor innovation makes all the difference. Thank you for joining us today. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting to explore the world of food science, there's always more to discover about the flavors that shape our experiences. Keep tasting, keep exploring, and keep thinking about the incredible world of flavor. Until next time, I'm Randy Donovan, and this is Flavor University, where every flavor tells a story.